Fan Morning Show. Cuthbert and Gunning.
You got to butter up Andrew behind the glass more. You got to talk about how good he is. He's always giving me the eyes to let me know if the guest is there. You got to get on his good side.
Yeah,
he's always telling me, but he's got to tell you.
If we're taking you inside a little bit, like clearly Ailish sits in the chair where she can look at, like that's how it goes. And I'm kind of in the corner here. If you've seen any of the videos, you sit in Ailish's chair. So I got to crank to make sure.
Got
to
butter him up.
That we're good to go. Andrew and Danielle are doing a great job behind the glass. As always, let's bring in our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It is a big weekend in Toronto. Level of Excellence is getting a new addition, and it will be none other than Jose Bautista to talk about Bautista and his time working with Bautista. We're bringing in Brooke Jacoby, former MLB infielder and the coach, the hitting coach, that is, of the Blue Jays from 2015 to 2018. So there's some pretty good seasons of Jose Bautista within that. Good morning, Brooke. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We are doing pretty good. Okay, so level of excellence means, you know, excellence, right? So Bautista is excellent. He had excellence. He oozes excellence. But what were the things that allowed him to excel in your time working with Jose?
Well, of course, Jose had made those adjustments prior to my getting there, and he had already established himself as a big power hitter in the league, the American League. I think with Jose, the biggest thing, I mean, those moments, he lived for those big moments, and he had a lot of them. In the short time that I was there, he did a lot of good things, helped us get to the playoffs in 15, had some pretty decent numbers in the playoffs as well. So he did a lot of good things there when I was there.
Yeah, he certainly did. And again, you don't get up on the level of excellence for nothing. So certainly a deserved honor for him. You know, there are many Bautista moments, but there's one that we all think of. We can't get anyone from that team on ever and not ask them about what it was like for them in the moment with the bat flip. I mean, we all think of it as the bat flip, but I remember the inning that, I don't know, it felt 3 hours long to me. I don't know how long it felt to you with the Shin Chu Chu play and everything going on there. Just what is it like when you think back to that moment is one that, I mean, everybody has memories of, but for you, I'm sure they're just a little fonder.
Well, you know, the home run was huge, but the way the fans reacted, I've never seen anything like it before. Talk about passion in baseball. You know, you see that kind of passion in hockey games and whatnot, but The stadium came crashing down, it seemed like.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, that is one of the most remarkable scenes I've seen in my sporting watching life. I wish I was in the building. Of course, you were. We're getting new. Like, we're seeing, obviously, highlights of it as we tee up here at Sportsnet. The big moment and the enshrinement, if you want to put it that way, on Saturday, and just seeing the look on all these guys' faces, familiar faces, guys you weren't you didn't remember until you saw the highlight over again. It's just so much joy that moment provided both the team and of course the fan base. You mentioned when you got there, Jose was already established, which was true. He already had his 54 home run season. He already had made his mark as an MLB player. So when you're coming into that situation with Jose Bautista already sort of, you know, running shot from a hitting standpoint with the Toronto Blue Jays, what's your approach with him? Are you just trying to, you know, get to know him as a hitter, trying to point out certain things, or do you leave a guy like Jose Bautista largely alone to his devices, because they're pretty good devices?
Well, they were good devices, but, you know, the only thing, you're just trying to build relationships with these guys and, you know, let them do the talking and what do they want me to look for? What do they need from me? What kind of information about pitching or, you know, the opposing staffs do they need? And basically leave them alone, get out of their way and let them do their thing.
Yeah, I think sometimes that is it, right? Is you don't want to gum up the works too much. And you know, you're a good guy to talk about this with because, you know, as good as those teams were, and we're talking about Batista specifically here, but I mean, you go up and down that lineup and they were deep lineups. There's been a lot of talk with this year's team about, you got a new approach up there. What is a hitting coach saying to players when they're going through a slump? And I imagine it's different for different players. You know, a guy like George Springer has really been going through it at times this year, coming out of it a bit now. I imagine it's a much different approach with a guy like Springer, who has had a long career and has a long track record, versus, you know, a younger player who's going through it. As a hitting coach, what types of things are you trying to kind of shepherd a guy through a slump?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that to stay positive with the players. Don't let them see you, you know, I mean, you can't doubt their abilities and what they've done. It's there. Something's just not clicking. And most of the time it's something mental. Or it could be easy as a timing issue. But, you know, guys will start pressing and you start, like you said, gumming up the works. It can just snowball and make things extended even longer. So try to keep it simple and fill them with positive things, and hopefully they can get back on track. I don't think there's any magic words that you say or any magic drills that you do that get them out of it. But, you know, consistent positive info and whatnot is really all you can do.
There was certainly magic in the summer of 2015. The Blue Jays hit a league-leading 232 home runs that season. I remember, just as a personal anecdote, being on vacation, just doing a little traveling that summer, and waking up every morning and seeing the Blue Jays hit, four or five home runs the previous night, and it was the best part of the morning when you were on vacation, waking up and seeing all the damage that your Blue Jay hitters were doing in 2015. From a coaching standpoint, from a baseball standpoint, from a fan standpoint, if you could, you probably were a fan watching all those home runs leave the yard that season. What was it like working with a team that was so successful at the plate in 2015, depths of summer where they're just hitting all those bombs?
Well, like you said, when you go to sleep at night, you sleep pretty good. But I think, I just lost my train
of thought. No worries. I'll get you back on track here. You know, we're talking a lot about Batista, and the other bat that jumps to mind from those teams is Encarnacion. They're kind of inextricably linked. Again, I don't want to take anything away from other great hitters that were on those teams, but I think people think of those guys. How different were they both to work with and just as hitters? I mean, a lot of people think, both power bats, how different could it be? But you got to work pretty closely with both of those guys. How different were they both, again, just as personalities and as hitters to work with?
Well, personality-wise, Eddie was a little more quiet. He joked around a lot with the players, but, you know, I didn't have that relationship with him. I had been with him prior over in Cincinnati. I was coaching in Cincinnati when he was there as a young rookie player. And we ended up trading him, I think, for Scotty Rowland. I think it was that deal that brought him over. But, you know, Batista was a little more vocal, it seemed like to me. Where Eddie was a little more quiet. I think Eddie stayed away from the media as much as he could. And Jose didn't. I mean, you know, Jose was he and Eddie were the face of the ball club at that time.
Oh, they definitely were. You mentioned that the stage is something that Jose Bautista craved. He excelled when the stage and the moment was bigger. Is that something that, you know, hitting coaches are highly conscious of? Because it's like, I don't know if the stage in a game in late May with two on is affecting the Blue Jays right now. I don't know if that stage is big enough, but this team has had troubles. This current team has had troubles with runners in scoring position. So is the moment something that factors into the equation for hitting coaches, whether it's a bigger at-bat than just a routine at-bat? Is that something where you can kind of tell where some thrive and just others don't?
Well, I think the guys that drive runs in are a little special. You know, it seems like anymore they don't place value as much on RBIs and as they used to, but I think it takes a certain mentality and a you know, a slow heartbeat, so to speak, to be in those situations and actually thrive. Some guys get a little amped up and try to do a little too much in those situations, where the good RBI guys, they can hit the ball the other way and just find a way to get those runs in.
Yeah, it's a killer instinct, right? And that's what Jose Bautista had in abundance. I mean, this is a guy who was, if I was going to pick a word, it'd be fiercely competitive. I guess that's two words. Fierce would be the one word. Two words would be fiercely competitive. It's a guy who I would imagine ran things in the clubhouse somewhat seriously. Like, what was Jose Bautista's vibe in the clubhouse? What was it like being a teammate of Jose Bautista? Was he as serious as it seemed like he was about baseball and about winning?
Well, I didn't. I was never his teammate, but I could see from outside, kind of outside. You know, the players have their own little fraternity in there. But he was very well respected in the clubhouse, and he was, you know, guys would go to him when they were struggling. What, you know, what did you do? How did you change things? And what made you come out of your struggles, or, you know, anything? Jose was there to help. And he didn't shy away from helping the younger players, which creates a good atmosphere in the clubhouse.
Yeah, it's certainly a culture that builds on players helping one another. I thought it's interesting to hear you say that about, you know, there's a pretty clear, maybe, you know, church and state separation is too strong a term, but there's a pretty clear separation between the coaches, the manager, and the players themselves. You know, I think people would be a little surprised to hear that. And again, not to say like you guys aren't talking to each other. Of course you are. But just what is the role of a manager on a team like that you had, with a lot of strong personalities and a guy like Bautista kind of running the show? And again, it wasn't just him. You had Russell Martin. You had Troy Tulowitzki. Like, there were a lot of personalities on those teams. What's the role of a manager with a group like that, that I don't want to say runs themselves, but has a lot of strong personalities involved?
Well, yeah, you'd hope the veteran guys would take care of the small things and allow the manager to manage and not have to deal with those types of things. But, you know, Gibby was a great manager for that group. And, you know, he got the best out of those guys. Players, manager, let them play and let them handle the other issues inside the clubhouse.
Last one for you, Brooke. Do you have a Jose Bautista story you can share? Something that when you think about that name, you're immediately reminded of in your overlap in your time working with him with the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, it wasn't necessarily working with him. It was something that happened on the field. And of course, the bat flip, you know, I'll never forget that and what came of that whole series. But we had a game. It was against the Orioles, and I believe it was in a playoff situation as well. But I think it was O'Day. O'Day threw behind Jose.
Oh, yeah.
And knocked him down. or, you know, he threw. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely O'Day. I know exactly the moment you're talking about. It was definitely O'Day, yeah.
And he homered. And I'm thinking to myself, I might have been stepping in the bucket a little bit right there, but Jose got back in there, man. He wanted nothing to do with stepping in the bucket.
Yeah.
And turned the pitch around and homered. I mean, it was amazing things he did.
Yeah, that was Jose Bautista, right? If he felt mildly aggrieved even, it seemed like good things were going to happen for him and for the Blue Jays. And that's why he's one of the most beloved athletes in this city, and why he's one of the most hated athletes in places like Baltimore, because he didn't make many fans outside of Toronto, but he made so many fans in his time in Toronto. We appreciate you coming on this morning, Brooke. This was fun catching up. I hope you have a chance to check out the proceedings this weekend, because it'll be a special moment seeing Jose Bautista enter the level of excellence. Thanks again for coming on, and we'll do this again one day.
Great, guys. Thank you very much.
That's Brooke Jacoby, former MLB infielder, Blue Jays hitting coach, in some of the glory years between 2015 and 2018. And our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Man, I'm just looking through baseball references for some of these Jays teams, and not like the ones we all remember. I'm going through the whole Jose Bautista run here, and it's like I've just got to 2013. You know what the highest WAR on the 2013 Blue Jays? Colby Rasmus. Man, what a time it was. I'm just looking at it, and it's like seeing Brett Laurie's face and Jose Reyes.
In 2 years, things changed so dramatically.
When Jose Bautista started as a J, his manager was Cito Gaston. Like, that is the level that he ran through of this franchise. It's like to Farrell, to Gibby, back to Gibby. Like, it is incredible, the run, the things he saw as a J. And fiery is far and away the word that I think of with him. I mean, again, like, I'm half joking here, but I'm mostly not, that when we had Bautista on, when we were at the Joe Carter Classic, and I asked him a question that was kind of critical of Vladdy, and it's like, he got offended about that, and that irked him, and it looked like he wanted to take me deep right then and there. It's like, he still has that in him. It is the thing you always want from your athletes, is for them to care as much as you do. And there are criticisms to be had of a lot of guys that they maybe don't feel the same way. That could never, ever be leveled at Bautista.
Yeah, until that question about Guerrero, is like, wow, Bautista's like chill. Like, that was not what I was expecting.
Why does he want to fight Gunning?
Yeah, he was laughing and joking with Joe Carter, and then Gunning went ahead and ruined that. No, he was actually really good with us, and it was awesome to catch up with him, and cool to talk to Brooke just now as well. I do have a question for you, because the FedEx Cup playoffs begin. Mm. FedEx St. Jude Championship gets underway today. Scottie Scheffler, the favorite. John Rahm and McIlroy on his heels. But the McIlroy question is this, because you are the McIlroy whisperer. We know that, like, legacy moments hold him back just a little bit. Money moments, though, and this is a money moment. Mm-hmm. This month is a money moment for the golf world. Mm-hmm. You can make a lot of coin if you have success over the next couple weeks here. Do those moments, are those too big for Rory at this point? Because that doesn't seem like it's the case. If he's playing for cash, it's all good. No. If he's playing for a major, you know, it's when it gets a little bit dicey. But do you expect to see, A good Rory McIlroy over the next month or so here? And B, like, are the problems and issues reserved for 4 weekends a year with him?
Yeah, they are. And again, it's like every golfer outside of the four that won majors this year would kill for his weekends at majors. Like, I know no one wants to hear that this is the Leafs outshot the Lightning on the deserve to win o-meter. Like, I understand what I'm saying here, but if you go just look at score to par in majors over the last 2 years, he is not just the best guy in that statistic. It is not even close. He won the FedEx Cup last year. I wholly expect him to have a good showing. It's like, golf is hard to predict. Who knows if he goes and wins the thing? But yeah, Rory's going to be there at the Tour Championship. He is going to be in the mix. He's going to be part of it on Sunday. The money isn't an issue for him. And quite honestly, I'm not going to say the majors aren't an issue. There's just always been someone a little bit better. And yeah, he needs to find a way to break through. Like, I'm not making an excuse for him there, but I wholly expect him to have a good showing in the FedEx Cup.
Okay, so what's the best way to play that opinion? Because we're going to do a Wake and Rake. The Wake and Rake, by the way, winning last night, which is great. You know, there's not just money for the golfers, could be money for us who are not golfing, or at least golfing in way less pressure-packed situations. Do you hunt down, like, head-to-heads? I'm seeing -130 for Rory against Patrick Cantlay.
You just don't bet Rory McIlroy. Like, no, unfortunately.
You just said this is when he shines.
No, but again, it's like, so the thing I would feel confident about saying, like, you should bet on Rory McIlroy to finish top five in the FedEx Cup when it's all said and done, but that's not going to pay you anything. Like, when you're betting golf, you have to search for value. Like, that is why I never touch Rory at a major. If I'm feeling super bullish about him, we'll maybe grab him at like a top five just to have a little action skin in the game. But when I'm betting golf, it is stay away from all the guys at the top. So yeah, you can go ahead, have a head-to-head. But the problem with head-to-heads at this time of year is they're all great golfers. Like, this week, it's a little less so with 70 as opposed to 50 next week. But that's the problem. It's like, Patrick Cantlay, it's like, do I feel better about Rory McIlroy?
Definitely high variance.
I do, but it's like, Patrick Cantlay could just as easy go out and shoot 66 today, and Rory could, you know, shoot a 70 and have a totally fine round, but it's just, yeah, big variance there. So you stay away from it. You just do not bet on Rory McIlroy unless you have a big feeling the exact opposite way I do. Like, it's like, that's where you get your value on a guy like him, is like to miss a cut at a major or something like that. That's where you see your value. It's just there's nowhere to find it on, I think, Rory McIlroy.
McIlroy will perform well at golf. It's just a fool's errand trying to chase it.
Patrick Cantlay's a money guy too. I mean, he's as far as I
he's
remember,
literally a Goldman Sachs on the hat.
Yes, that is a good point. I think he'll be ready for this month as well. I think it might be the most important thing to old Patrick Cantlay. But yeah, the FedEx St. Jude gets underway probably in about 9 minutes or so. I guess,
don't know. Actually, I don't know. I just saw a tweet about some amended tee times, so there could be some weather on the ground.
So could be some weather. There always could be some weather, and there could be some weather, I guess, in Memphis, but not too late yet to get in a little action if you're wanting to bet the FedEx Cup and the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll do a proper wake and rake today. We'll leave time for that. We got Harold Reynolds, next. We'll talk a little bit more about Bautista going to the level of excellence. Harold Reynolds had a great spot to witness that moment, and we'll go around the league with Harold and proper wake and rake after that. So get your wake and rake submissions in. Let's try and make it two in a row. Michael Lorenzen cashing for us with a no-hitter. Maybe the good vibes will continue on into a baby Friday. We will do Harold Reynolds and the wake and rake after the break.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For someone of our vintage, Gunner, I think there are truly two "where were you" moments.
Okay.
One was the golden goal.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
I think everyone remembers where they were, what they were doing, who they were with. The
Shout
other
out to 471 Randolph in Windsor, baby, my university house.
There you go. I think I was 26 Suffolk.
Okay.
I don't know why we're putting addresses out there.
Yeah.
We shouldn't. In London, Ontario.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Someone wants to go bug that guy who lives in Windsor. Sorry, bud.
And the other one, of course, is the bat flip. So I ask you, Gunner, because I don't know, and you can have a conversation with any Jays fan anywhere if
it's
you
true.
Just bring up this discussion or this topic. Where were you for the bat flip?
I will not give the address, but I was at my parents' home where I don't know if I was living or if I was just visiting there, but yes, I was at my parents' house for said bat flip.
Okay.
It was pretty crazy. What about you?
Bar across from a former workplace.
Mm.
It wasn't a private room, but it basically amounted
Felt
to
like
a
it.
Private
yeah.
room because it was just one of those bars with like a bunch of weird little rooms,
oh,
but they
yeah.
had a TV, and it was probably the most excited I've ever been watching a single sports moment. I think it was, of course, there was maybe a little extra there because you're in a bar, you're with friends, and
mm-hmm.
you're enjoying yourself. But yeah, it is probably the sports moment that I think I will never forget. Like the golden goal, do I remember exactly how it happened? Where mm-hmm. it went down? Yes. Do I remember it as vividly? No, I don't think I do. I think 2015 and the bat flip will always be the top of the list for me. In just terms of remembering and being in the moment for a sports moment specifically.
For me, that is the Raptors title. It's not it's not the shot that I'm talking about. It's specifically the title night. Like I was out at an establishment, but I wasn't in the thick of it downtown. And I just remember stepping out of the bar and everyone's just hugging on the streets. And a guy just had a saxophone out the window of his car because he's just so happy that they won. So that's the one that sticks out for me. But yeah, bat flip up there for a lot of people as well.
I know where Harold Reynolds was for the moment, for the bat flip in 2015. And he's our next guest, former MLB infielder and current MLB Network analyst. Harold Reynolds joins us now. Jose Bautista entering the level of excellence. You were there for the most memorable moment of his career, the bat flip in 2015. Do you have memories of that night? Do you have flashes of that moment, that home run, that setting still pop up in your memory, Harold?
I just remember how loud it was. That place was rocking. And, yeah, when he hit the ball, but the reaction, you didn't follow him, you're following the baseball, right? So really it was more on the replay when you saw his bat flip, but just the crowd. That was a crazy series, back and forth, just excitement, and it was really cool. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear you say that, because, like, obviously here in Toronto and Canada, it's an iconic moment, and not to say that it isn't across baseball, but, you know, obviously we love the recognition from somebody like you. You know, looking at a moment like that, what else stands out to you, whether it be from your career as a player, as a broadcaster? Like, are there any other moments that you were in the building for that just kind of jump out in a similar way?
Well, I mean, it reminds me of the Joe Carter home run. I was at that game, too, you know, when... when you think about iconic moments in Toronto, the Joe Carter home run, that Bautista, and there was a weird, crazy play. I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but the catcher threw the ball back and the hitter, the batter's bat, and ricocheted. And I had that happen when I was in A-ball. And so I knew that that's a live ball. So I immediately... And the broadcast was able to go, that's a live ball. And they were running all over the place. And, you know, the researchers were searching for for the answers and all that. But I was like, I lived that in minor league baseball. So those three or four incidences in Toronto. And then the other one, I guess the fourth one for me, is the Jose Canseco home run he hit in the fifth deck or whatever in Toronto that time. He hit that massive home run. So those are my moments that kind of stand out in that stadium.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Carter. We were lucky enough, actually, at Joe Carter's golf tournament this year to interview him and Bautista together. And it's like, those are the two guys who have hit the most iconic homers in franchise history. So, yeah, that was incredible. And, yeah, it's great to get you on. And, you know, the reason we're starting talking to you about that is Bautista going into the level of excellence this weekend. Not many people have their names up there. So certainly a special honor for him. Do want to ask you about this year's iteration of the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, this has been a team that has been confounding to a lot of people. George Springer at one point was in a 0-for-35 slump. Vladdy has not been his normal self. And then to throw everything for even further a wrench, you lose Bo Bichette for nearly a month or so here. From an outside looking in, what are your opinions of the Jays?
Well, I've always felt like they were the best team in the American League. Above Houston and above, obviously, Texas out west right now, they're on the top. But in the American League East, it's a dogfight. And even above Tampa and New York and whatever else, I always thought that the Blue Jays were the team to beat. I just love their lineup. I thought their pitching was going to be a lot better. They just haven't put it together consistently. But the beauty of a Major League season, like last night, they win a game 1-0, Springer homers in the first inning, and they win that game. So little things start to turn you around. And the race is still so tight. And I think we're at a point now where it's like, just get in the postseason. You don't have to win your division. Just get in. And those teams that can rise to the top with loaded talent have a chance to make a run. In the National League, I think of San Diego. If San Diego gets in, they're a dangerous team. And I think the same way is viewed with the Blue Jays. If they get in the playoffs, they're a team that can actually make a run all the way to the World Series. They're that deep and that loaded.
Yeah, it definitely is the most important thing now just to get in, because we saw just as recent as last year, the Philadelphia Phillies went on a run that was largely unexpected. They got a chip in a chair and they used it to get to the final table, get to the World Series, ultimately come up short against the Houston Astros. But if you get in, you certainly have a chance, and you have the chance to erase what would be and what's trending towards sort of a entire season of disappointment from a lineup perspective. I mean, maybe that's a little hyperbolic, but you said you had a lot of expectations for the lineup. We had more expectations for the lineup and certain individuals who have not necessarily lived up to expectation. But is it as simple as, hey, if you get to the playoffs, you can turn the page, and what happened over 162 doesn't as matter as much because there's a new opportunity right in front of you?
It is that simple. Sometimes it's as simple as turning the page of the calendar. You know, you may have had a bad May. All right, here comes June. You know, I may have had a bad June. Here comes July. That's kind of how guys, players think. And you almost think in increments of 100 at-bats, and you think in increments of a month. So if you can just kind of turn that page and get rolling. You know, I looked at, like, Vladdy, for example. You were saying there was one stretch he hadn't homered at home.
Yep.
And eventually, you know, he went out and hit, like, 3 or 4 home runs at home. So it's just strange how seasons go like that. But I really believe that as the ball gets rolling, Everybody struggles at the same time, and everybody gets hot at the same time. And it just takes a little turn of the page to get it going.
You know, there's so much talk in this market specifically. I'm sure it's not just here. I'm sure it's a lot of places. But the second the bats go quiet at all eyes immediately go to the hitting coach. Like, what is it this guy does here? Can he please fix them? You have worked with hitting coaches in your big league career. I imagine you have kind of worked as a hitting coach for your teammates, with you guys bouncing things off of each other. What is it that a coach or teammates are doing for a player? And like you said, maybe you're all kind of mired in it together. But so often we hear this idea of, the hitting coach has to do something, or you got to make an adjustment. What are they throwing at you? And I imagine it's different for kind of every player, but what are they throwing at you in those moments when a player or a whole team is kind of slumping?
Well, it's funny. If you'd asked me this question 10 years ago, I'd have a different answer. 5 years ago, okay. Different answer. I think our game has changed so much with the involvement of front offices. Lineup construction has a lot to do with how guys perform. And how I feed off a certain guy. You know, when I was playing, you hit in increments of three, like the first three hitters in the lineup, the next three hitters like that. And you would continually be around that person. So I'd say, hey, I'm going to be running early in the count. So a guy might take pitches for me, or he might know he's going to get fastballs to hit. You know, we change our lineup so much now. I don't think players are able to gauge what are they going to throw me based on who's hitting around me. And that has a lot to do with how lineups are hot or cold. And it's not just the Blue Jays. It's prevalent throughout baseball. So I think when you find a team like the Atlanta Braves, says, here's our lineup, go get them. They have consistency every season. And it doesn't surprise me that the Braves continue to have great offensive production year in, year out, and they don't go in these long lulls of guys not producing, because I think they have consistency. And with the inconsistent lineups that front offices produce, I think it produces inconsistency within production as well. So that's how I look at it. There's never been a bigger change in our sport than the swing paths guys are taking and the lineups that are being produced. So I think all that produces inconsistency.
If I'm sharing my own internal processes, Harold, it's that I'm trying to wrap my head around the Blue Jays having a good bullpen, because for my entire life, it seems like the Blue Jays have lacked in that department. But this year, they just seem to have the pieces coming together. They've got a guy like Chad Green, who may or may not be an option for them, who could be and has been a dominant guy in previous walks in Major League Baseball. But last night was a good example of it, because Jordan Romano wasn't available, and they had a combination across two innings of Eric Swanson, Jordan Hicks, and Tim Mayza, you know, sharing two innings and putting the Guardians away in a one-run ball game. And it's just the Guardians. It's a lesser lineup for sure, but there's some flexibility there, and there's some room for improvement there with Jordan Romano likely being available when it matters the most. So when you look at the back end of the bullpen for the Blue Jays, does it, in your opinion, stack up to anyone else in the American League?
Yeah, they've got a fantastic bullpen. And, you know, how they're using them has really been a difference. And I think Jordan Hicks getting him late like they did gives them even more flexibility, like you just talked about. Last night, if you watch the game, that really, as you just laid out and documented so well, it really showed what they're capable of doing. So imagine now you get a starter that goes 5-6 innings. You can back all those guys up in the back part of the game. So yeah, I think the bullpens, believe it or not, will win games the rest of the year. The bullpen is going to be the key to a postseason if a team fails or if a team succeeds. It really starts to fall back on that bullpen.
Yeah, the only thing, if I'm going to get picky, and it shows how good the Jays bullpen is, if I'm going to get picky, they don't have that, like, Andrew Miller can go a couple innings guy, but Jordan Hicks can go a couple innings if they need him to. Like, you don't typically want to stretch him out to 5-6 outs, but he has done that in the past. And the other thing about it is, you know, they all haven't been great, but they're running a 6-man rotation, so it's possible they convert one of their starters into that kind of longer guy should the need be. They're going to start up a series tomorrow against the Cubs. I'll be honest, I'll put my hand up. I was shocked to see the Cubs had the record they did at this point in time. Are you surprised that they've kind of turned it around so quickly there?
Yeah, I think everybody is. You know, when you went, they went into the winter last year. They signed Dansby Swanson. You go get Cody Bellinger. You didn't know what he was going to end up doing. Now he's hitting 330, and he's back in the MVP conversation. You know, those two players really flipped everything around for the Cubbies. And then they've got some pretty good production. But I don't think anybody thought they'd be at this point. Even as they're entering into the trade deadline the 1st of August, it was, okay, if we're at four games back or five games back out of the wild card, do we sell these guys off in Stroman and in Bellinger, or do we keep them? And so even the Cubs, as of 2 weeks ago, were sitting there going, what are we going to do? So I still think there's a little surprise in it. But, man, they put the pedal to the metal now. They're playing great baseball. They're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. And they're really starting to put it together. So so for you to look at the record today, I don't think you're alone in being surprised at the playing as well as they are.
MLB Network's Harold Reynolds on the line with us. Okay, so let's look at the rest of the American League. Actually, let's look at the top end of the American League East, because I don't know if we should, you know, count out the Yankees and Red Sox, but I'm willing to do it at least today. I've got my eyes, of course, on the Orioles and Rays. Orioles having a little bit of a hiccup right now. Rays have not been very good since their torrid start. Now, it's not imperative that the Blue Jays catch one of them, but do you see either of them as vulnerable at this point in the season? It might be too early to say that about Baltimore, despite maybe being outclassed here by a really good team in Houston. But the Rays just being, I think, about five games up or ahead of the Blue Jays. Do you think the Blue Jays can catch them based on where their season trajectory seems to be going?
I think they can catch the Rays. You know, the Rays have been, you know, they have these pitching injuries right now. I think McClanahan being out is really going to hurt them. And their offense is kind of slow. So, like you said, they haven't played great baseball since really the first half of the season. So they're still, they got such a great start that they're kind of riding that wave still. The Baltimore Orioles, I thought this was a learning series against the Houston Astros. You know, you lose on a grand slam to your closer, who's probably the best in American League right now, in Bautista, in the first night with Tucker and hitting the grand slam for the Astros. But I look at the way they lost these games. Those are all about experience. How are we going to adjust the next time we're in this situation? I think the talent is there. They're a really good club. They're better than most people thought, but I think they've really matured. I think they'll learn from – this weekend was big for them, playing against the Astros. It's kind of a litmus test. Where do we really stand? And I think that's how they'll go forward. So I don't see the Orioles really having as much of a hiccup as maybe the Rays. The Blue Jays just got to take care of business. I think they're their own worst enemy. You know, they dug themselves in a hole. If they can continue to – they have as much talent as anybody. If they can stay out of their own way, take care of business one day at a time, I still think they got a shot to really do some big things this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, the question I have with Baltimore, and I'll ask it to you right now, it's the one I have after the deadline, it's the one I had heading in, is how should a team at their kind of spot in their window approach things? I mean, they didn't sit on their hands. They went out and got Jack Flaherty, and he was okay last night. He was really good in his first outing against the Jays. That's not nothing, but I did, you know, they have all the prospect capital in the world. They could have gone and got anything they wanted for all intents and purposes, but I also realize this is a young team, and maybe you want to save some of those prospect bullets for, you know, when Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman are a year old or a year better. What did you make of their approach at the deadline? Again, they didn't do nothing, but they could have been potentially more aggressive as well.
Well, if you remember last year, they traded their closer.
So I do.
I think this year, you know, this year they understand a little bit better where they're at.
Baby steps, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're saying, hey, we're really good. We're making a run, but we understand our window is the next 5 years. And they weren't going to blow that up. So I still think they were like, if something presents itself, like they were in on Shohei Ohtani. A lot of conversations about the Orioles going out to get Shohei Ohtani. And they knew it was going to be a rental, and they knew they were going to have to give up prospects to get it. So they were going for the big fish. I don't think they would just do it for anybody. You know what I mean? Unless that player was like,
yep,
truly going to help them get over the mountaintop. And I don't think anybody at this trade deadline, they sat there outside of Justin Verlander, that they said, this would get us over the mountaintop. I don't think you saw that outside of Ohtani and Verlander. So they didn't get those players. They didn't make that move. They did a little incremental things that might help them. But for the most part, they're like, let's roll with it. And I think next year, as they start, the next 2 years, they're going to have to start to lock up players. They're going to have to try to keep this core together. And they've still got some great prospects coming. So I think that's how they viewed it.
Last one for you here, Harold. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays, or I guess the Orioles, could make things easier on the Jays by dropping down a little bit. But the Jays are in a bit of a precarious position right now in that they're sandwiched between the Astros and Seattle Mariners and clinging to the final playoff spot. I mean, I think it's going to be difficult to chase down the Houston Astros. They look like they're a sleeping giant potentially in the American League. But I think the major concern, if there is any, for the Blue Jays right now is how hot these Mariners are and how well they are playing right now. Seven straight victories, 9 of their last 10. They are only 2 games back of the Blue Jays. So I'll ask you, how real are the Mariners and how real is this threat that they seem to be putting together?
Well, I think they're real. You know, they were a playoff team last year. They hadn't played very good until the last 2 weeks. And they're putting it together now. I think schedule is going to help the Mariners a little bit. I think when you look at, they're going to play Oakland. The Angels have not been very good. Those are the clubs they're going to play. When Toronto's turn around, they've got to play the Yankees and the Red Sox and guys like that. Even though the records aren't there, you know they're formidable opponents that are better than what the Mariners are going to face. That's the tough part about the wild card. You're not going one-on-one with Toronto and Seattle saying, all right, mano a mano, let's see who's better. No, now you got to leapfrog while they're playing somebody else, and that's what makes it very difficult.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be a fascinating race down the stretch. There's a lot of good teams in the American League. I'm not sure we can say the same about the National League. It seems like the Braves are, well, they're very comfortable in the standings right now, but maybe pretty comfortably going to the World Series. We shall see. There will be someone that says something about that, but it is highly, highly competitive in the American League, and specifically the American League East, so it should provide a brilliant finish. Harold, we appreciate you coming on this morning. We'd love to do it again before the end of the season. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, guys. Fantastic. I appreciate it. Anytime. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Harold Reynolds of MLB Network. Little disappointing to pull up the probables for the Cubs this weekend, not seeing Marcus Stroman slated
to start.
Yeah,
you would have liked that. Although, I don't know that you would.
Oh, I would have loved it.
No, like,
come on. It is fitting that Stroman is here on the weekend that Bautista is going up.
The story, everything you want it. It's just as likely as it is that Marcus Stroman would go out there and get hit around a little bit and everyone go, oh, yeah, this is great. It's just like we talk about a guy who gets his back up against the wall in Bautista. That's kind of Marcus Stroman, too. So careful what you wish for there. Probably for the best that he is just going to be there smiling and injecting himself into things.
He will inject himself into things. That's a pretty good way to put it, Gunnar.
That's a lock in the wake and rake. That's off the board everywhere. It's like Marcus Stroman being in the mix minus 300,000.
He will inject minus 3,000. Let's hit that wake and rake.
Wake up!
Now it's time for wake and rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
So to reiterate, we did win the Wake and Rake last night in pretty decisive fashion. Mm-hmm. Michael Lorenzen throwing a no-hitter. Phillies cover the run line. And Gausman throws 6 Ks to cover the 5.5 K line. And, of course, another game goes under. What's new between the Guardians and the Blue Jays? 1-0 the final. George Springer getting the only knock of that game. I hear and I understand, Gunnar, because you've already said it on this show, that you are going back to the well.
Yeah, why would I screw around? They're giving me one more run to play with. I know that's because Manoa and Syndergaard are the starters in this game. Little different than Kevin Gausman being on the bump, just a touch. But I had a lot of wiggle room there yesterday, and they're giving me one more run of wiggle room. Under 9.5 runs, minus 110. Give it to me. It's a coward bet, I feel like, but I don't care. It's going to cash.
The aggregate under, if there is such thing, will certainly hit in this series. Only 6 runs in 3 games. Hopefully not, because we're trying to hit an under. But I'd like to see, 7. A little entertainment plus a winning back
Jays
would
could
be
win
nice.
7-0. That could happen. That's not out of the question.
That would be lovely.
Feels a little dicey with Manoa, I got to be honest.
That does feel
a little
6-2. Dicey.
There we go.
Only one submission, I I guess I'm not doing my part reminding you to throw in Wake and Rake submissions, especially a day after a victory. So we got to go, and we're okay with going with Courier Chris in Niagara Falls today. He's going Springer over 1.5 total bases. He's on a roll this series. He's been on a roll for the last 8 games.
I'll allow it.
We'll allow it.
Yeah, I'm on board.
It does run counter a little bit to the under 9.5, but those things aren't directly correlated. So over 1.5 total bases for George Springer will be the third play. My play, I'm going to the NFL preseason.
Yes.
I've got the itch.
Crazy,
I need to scratch
but
it.
Yes.
I need to scratch it. The Texans don't have like the best quarterbacks in the world, but they got good preseason quarterbacks. C.J. Stroud, of course, their first-round draft pick, will get the nod tonight. He'll probably be playing a fair amount. But after they get off Stroud, they go to Davis Mills, who has tons of experience.
Yeah, that's a guy.
He could be a great preseason quarterback against lesser competition. And their third string is Case Keenum. That's the thing in preseason. Like, you're waiting for the bad quarterbacks to arrive. With the Houston Texans, you don't really have to do that. So -3.5 over the New England Patriots, who have no interest in winning preseason games. Give me the Texans to cover.
Oh, careful. Billy Zappi going to come zappy in the back half of that game. Patriots backup quarterback.
Yeah,
careful.
Bailey Zappi can hang.
I have no opinion on that, actually. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I do like your rationale. Pick the team with all half-decent backup quarterbacks in the preseason is actually exceptional gambling logic, so I will not knock you for it.
And you're not going to allow me to play...
What?
McElroy -130 over Cantley today. You say I shouldn't.
You can do whatever you want. That's just
I'm asking for your advice.
No, don't do that. At -130, it's like there is no juice to squeeze out of that, and it's like it's a push. Quite honestly, like if you're just being like if we're setting honest lines about that, it's more or less a push. So yeah, I don't want you to do that to yourself.
Okay, it is plus money by the way on George Springer over 1.5 bases. So if you put that parlay together, ooh.
Can't do it.
It's going to be a little tight for me. I got to do this very quickly. +105. We are going to get in the +700 range, depending on where you're playing. So that's pretty good with a little plus money and with a little preseason action.
Also, I feel like we were talking about playoff races in baseball. We might have one. Not so much regarding any divisions in the American League. NL Central, though. Cubs and Reds, both 2.5 games back of the Brewers. I feel like every year there's a division race, and it's because all those teams are either okay or good-ish on any given year. The Reds obviously kind of re-injecting themselves this year. They're kind of playing the card spot. But yeah, we might get a real live division race in baseball. Obviously, you know, maybe the Cubs could fall out of it. That'd be nice for the Blue Jays this weekend. But yeah, we might get a real live division race.
The Reds hitting the skids at the wrong time.
I would like to say I was right about this. I came on here in the throes of the Ellie De La Cruz hype, and I'm like, it's still the Reds, guys.
Guess what?
It's still the Reds.
How about the Padres? +56 run differential. They have to leapfrog 4 teams to get into the last wild card.
I don't know
position.
How. I don't even possible? Understand how that happens.
And they've lost 4 in a row because they are in Seattle and getting drubbed by the Mariners who don't lose.
I did like Barker's rationale of they just got too many dogs in the room. Too many cooks in the kitchen in San Diego. There's too many alphas.
There are a lot of alphas with the San Diego Padres. There's an alpha who's going to be celebrated in Toronto this weekend, and that's Jose Bautista. Oh, okay. The alphas of all alphas, at least when it comes to the Blue Jays in recent history. It's going to be an important weekend, a fun weekend. We'll tee the rest of that up tomorrow on the Fan Morning Show.